Hey, everybody. Welcome to Buzzing About Romance. I am Becky, and I am super excited to be joined by a special guest co-host, Laura, from What to Read Next podcast. Welcome to the podcast, Laura.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to have book recommendations, romance, and all the things.
All the things. I'm super excited, too. Real quick, before we get into like the bookish talk, both of us are obsessed with Secret Lives of Mormon Wives.
Yes, I am. Mormons make a great TV.
They do make great TV. And I keep saying we need to do like a debrief because lots of people in our community have started watching it. And you and I, like, because I made Jenny watch it, and I really feel like we all need to sit down and do a debrief for everybody.
I volunteer. I'll tell you one story. I had a sleepless night. I'm perimenopausal, so I'm starting to get the sleepless night. And I woke up at 2 o'clock in the morning on Thursday, on the Friday when it aired. And at 2 o'clock in the morning, I see a story, and they're like, start talking about Secret Lives. And I was like, you know, this is a good 2 o'clock in the morning show that I should watch in the middle of the night. I literally watched the whole 7 episodes or 8 episodes from 2 a.m. in the morning till like 12 o'clock. And I was working. I was like, okay, I could not stop watching. This is such a good reality TV show. Such a good show.
Yeah.
Petty drama, mean girls, teen moms. Just, oh, so good.
It's just fascinating that these people sit there and expose all their dirty secrets, are walking contradictions to supposedly the life that they're in. Like, you have everyone from the woman that's like completely upset because she forgot her sacred married Mormon garments. Yes. So she just goes commando in like a mini dress.
Yes.
Okay. And I tell you what, you and I talk about it all the time, but the ketamine and the laughing gas, but we won't drink a cup of coffee or have a glass of tea.
I know, because the ketamine is prescribed by a doctor, and the laughing gas is prescribed by the med spa doctor who gets the Botox. Because also think about Botox, like, why would you put some poison in your face? And I have laughing gas. It's all good.
Right? Like, it's just, it's so bonkers. You and I, though, do disagree a little bit. Yes. On Whitney. I do not think she is the biggest villain that everyone says that she is. I have others that I think are actually bigger villains, like Jennifer Affleck, who...
Well, I think Jennifer is in a bad marriage, and I think that's, like, the difficulty. I don't want to blame her. She obviously, her trauma informs that she ended up trying to marry up. And so even though she then becomes a breadwinner, but she's in a marriage that is...
toxic?
Not good. That's toxic and it's just abusive. And it's just like puts her in a place where she feels like she's being controlled. So I don't see her. I see her as a victim. Yeah. I haven't seen her empowered enough to say like, enough. I am the breadwinner. I'm not going to give you gambling money. Because think about it. Gambling. Another thing.
Right. So, and they go to Vegas. But apparently for people that live in Utah, doesn't matter what community you live, going to Vegas is a thing. Like, they do it fairly regularly.
Yeah.
Like, okay.
Yeah. And
anyway, I do think we do have to visit this whole Secret Lives.
We do. I will be more than happy to do a roundtable and dissect this show, as I've dissected other shows on YouTube. So it is exciting. So Secret Lives is just as good.
Yeah. Well, and I don't know. There is something, and I think it takes me back to like old school reality TV. Like, I grew up with MTV's Real World and Road Rules and like the drama that happened.
Yes.
And I feel like this is much closer to that than Love Island or Housewives.
Yeah, this is like reminiscent of Laguna Beach, which just aired 20 years ago, and like how amazing that is. It's a reminiscent, like, they didn't know any better, but these girls know that they're influencers, and so they know that the more drama creates more money, more opportunities and more things. And so it goes back to old school reality TV where they don't know any better, and they didn't realize like what they're saying like might come, how it come up to the audience. And yet at the same time, they know that they have to produce drama. And so it's a smarter Laguna Beach, smarter Real World, Real Rules.
Yeah.
Like they know they can monetize this, and not only that, they can squeeze those 15 minutes for as long as possible.
Well, and they're finding their fame as they're doing this versus if you think about those shows, they found their fame after
Yep.
those shows. Those shows were
Yeah.
their launching point, which in this one it's not. So yeah, we probably do need to have a round table and break this down.
We do. And so
Yeah.
that's a TV watch. I actually just started the new Adam Brody and Kristen Bell show, which
Oh.
is a rom-com series on Netflix. It's about Shiksa
Nice.
who falls in love with a rabbi. So
I did watch, I just re-upped our Netflix because I'm a huge British Bake Off fan.
yes.
I had to watch British Bake Off this week, so
There we go.
I can't, I don't know. I love it.
Yeah, I actually have a TV rewatch show. So my show is on Netflix, and so I it's a tax deduction. That's how I call it. It's an expense. It's a tax expense. I need Netflix for my taxes
I get
for
it.
the podcasting that
Yes, it does make sense for that. For
Yes.
me, it's just, you
So
know.
you just need to have a podcast to talk about Netflix shows, and then you just like tax deduct it.
Well, yeah, I guess we could start doing that.
Yes.
Although if I say to Mike, I've got an idea for another show, he's gonna look at me and be like, "No, you don't. No, you
As
don't."
someone who has almost three podcasts running around,
Right? There's always time to work. Who needs sleep?
yeah. Who needs sleep? You just need to just have a microphone, you know?
Right. Okay, so Secret Lives of Mormon Wives and Reality TV is not actually our topic today. Our topic today is, so if you are on Threads, if you are on TikTok, this is a constant on repeat conversation that, to be honest, before I joined Bookstagram, like pre-2020, I didn't know there were people that did not know this. So today we are diving into the world of romance endings. We're going to break down the difference between HEA, happily ever after, HFN, happily for now. We'll also explore how these are different from genre fiction with romantic elements, whether you crave the certainty of true love or enjoy the open possibilities. This episode is all about what makes romance special compared to other genres. And of course, we're going to give you some book recs that sample, like, you know, one of the big ones that kind of, I think, sways the line of romance are cozy mysteries.
Yes.
So we're going to talk a little bit about those. But before we get into that, I want to give everyone the history briefly, because we all know I like a good deep dive in a history on the romance genre. So the romance genre, defined as li in literary terms, traces its roots back to the 18th century. The modern form of romance began to take shape with novels such as Samuel Richards' Pamela, 1740, which emphasized courtship and romantic relationships. However, it was in the 19th century, with the works of authors like Jane Austen and Charlotte Bronte, that the genre became more fully established, with a focus on romantic love as the central theme. The romance genre, as we recognize it today, with a focus on emotional relationships and happy endings, typically the HEA or the HFN, started becoming more distinct in the 20th century, particularly with the rise of category romance novels like those published by Mills and Boons, founded in 1908, and Harlequin in the 30s and 40s. But by the 1970s and 80s, romance was firmly defined as a genre with its own set of conventions, especially the requirement of an HEA, or with the happy or emotionally satisfying ending. Romance becomes officially defined within the literary landscape during this time. This is distinct from the genre that features romantic elements, but does not focus on the romantic relationship as the primary narrative. So I think we have authors. In the grand scheme of thing, I think there are authors that are labeled as romance by their publishing companies, that if we dig them apart and really look at them, they're really more genre fiction with romantic elements, and within the genre fiction, the women's genre fiction. So, like, one of the big ones is, in my opinion, Emily Henry. Her books are not necessarily focused solely on the romance. They're more on those relationships, self-discovery, you know, friendships outside of the romantic relationship seems to be a happenstance of the situation.
Yes.
I mean, is there an Emily Henry book with a meet cute? Because the two that maybe I read, I've only read two.
Maybe Beach Read will have that at like a second meet cute, the second chance, because they had enemies to lovers at the beginning. I read most of Emily Henry's meet cute. So that one actually has the second chance where they share the houses. Book Lovers has a meet cute. It's a disastrous meet cute because they meet at a meeting and they don't like each other, and then they re-meet in the small town. The latest one, Funny Story, I have read. I actually do like Emily, surprisingly. Funny Story, he actually meets them. They broke up. They're basically, she broke up with her fiance and his fiance broke up with him, and they're living together in the house, and he's smoking weed and singing a song, and she knocks on his door. So I think they meet before that, but that's when we meet the characters.
Yeah.
So they're kind of like, they're loosely based, but yeah, I agree. They're more genre fiction. They're romantic comedies. They're more like the idea of like what we see romantic comedies on TV. There's the idea of like the romantic stories there, but there's also the character arc that, you know, drives the story forward.
Right.
It's not the romantics that drive the story forward.
Yeah. I also feel like one of the genres that it's really hard for people to understand that there needs to be the HEA or the HFN is probably within that romantic suspense,
yeah,
maybe even darker romances.
Yes.
That people struggle. Like, so when an author's trying to write this and they're trying to get into that, like, deep emotional baggage that dark romance really always has, they sometimes get lost,
yeah,
in the baggage and forget about the relationship and the arc that we have to get to for it to be the satisfying romance.
Or it might be shocker. I read The Ritual by Chantal Tessier, which is a pretty dark romance. The ending is totally does not make sense. It ends like a romance, but it does not make sense. It does not make sense to the character's journey that we went through, because the ending was too vanilla,
yeah,
for like the level of like the push and pull that you put them through, and she puts them through a ringer, and then it's like, oh, we're just gonna be happily ever after and we're all fine, and you're like, no
you're not.
Like, either just be the same way or suffer a little bit more.
Yeah.
Make them suffer. It's okay.
I don't disagree with that. And actually, Lindo says here, we should start calling things like this like love stories without giving them the title of romance.
Some of them do have love stories, like The Idea of You, which is
the one she just gave, The Idea of You.
Yep.
Yeah.
The Idea of You, which I love. It's a great book. But it's not a romance. And we know it's not a romance. And a lot of people are angry because of the ending. And I know they updated the ending. I didn't finish the movie because I got too mad about it. But I know they updated the ending in the movie. But the reality is that it ends as a love story. It ends, they broke it up. Like, that's the ending. You know, it's not a romance.
Well, the one, Me Before You.
Oh, that's not a romance. That's totally, he dies.
He dies. And she moves. But I will tell you, there are people in this world, because of the deep emotions in that book, that,
yes,
people in this world, you'll say, oh, you know, they'll say, oh, what do you do? And you'll say, oh my God, I'm a book editor for romance books. And they're like, oh my God, I loved Me Before You. And I'm like,
she has that's children's books. I read the trilogy. I read, what's her name? Louisa's story. She finds her HEA later on, and she finds his long lost daughter. So there's going to be some sort of connection, but That's not a romance. That's just a woman's fiction or genre fiction, sad story with an arc about, he dies. Sorry to spoil it for you. He
Sorry to spoil it for
dies.
you. It's pretty obvious what's happening. So when we talk HEA and HFN, let's define typically what an HEA needs to look like, and what it doesn't have to have. So I think a book can end in an HEA. It does not have to end in a wedding, doesn't have to end in an engagement, it doesn't have to end with babies, and it doesn't need an epilogue. Just saying for those.
I like epilogue, so I am fine with that. So
She's
sorry,
a
we're in a
wise
different team here.
friend.
However, I don't think we need to end with babies, weddings, stuff like that. They can just end up buying a house. They can end up getting a puppy. They end up just like knowing that they're not going to get divorced. That's what HEA means. They're not going to get divorced.
Right.
And HFN, maybe they'll get divorced,
Well, and I think that the idea of an HFN to me fits the genre of new adult the
Yes.
best. Because, this is like maybe they were high school, because sometimes they start as young as high school. Sometimes, it's just college or just starting. And the person you are at 19 or 20 is not, I mean, I got married young. I got married at 22. But I don't necessarily think that everybody's going to get married at 22 and find the love of their life at 21.
Yeah, I, as someone who's not married, who's childless by choice, I would tell you that I'm a very different person at 43 than I was at 19, 20, 21, 25, 26, even 30. I am a different person. And so I changed my mind. There's a lot of things I changed my mind and my identity, and relationships is one of those. I've changed friends over time. It's
Oh,
part of it.
even as married, and married 25 years, 26 years with the same person, I am not the same person I was at 22. I'm not even the same person I was 5 years ago. And we actually, kind of shared we were just coming off some stressful things, and Mike and I got into an argument about something, and he looks at me and he says, "Why do we argue about other people and not about anything between us?" And I'm like, "Dude, we argued that out by the time we were 34. Like,
Yeah.
that was 15 years ago. We got nothing left to argue about. We know each other's dirty secrets."
Yeah. So I think it's interesting to see like the relationship evolve. And I see that HFN for new adult, young adult, like any younger, kind of like ship, like hit someone out of water, a fish out of water, and then just trying to figure out and then realizing like, maybe my life in the other place was better. Maybe I want to go back to the big city,
Right. There just seems that story will have a little less certainty to
Yeah.
it. Jenny says, "I need an I love you for it to be an HEA." So the couple has to exchange an I love you. And I think that's a pretty easy
Yeah.
piece to add to it. To think of it like that, because sometimes, like we do get one-sided I love yous that not both. And that would have the feel of the HFN.
I love you. It's fine.
So there's every once in a while I come across a TikTok, and I think it's just one book talker that does it, but I think deeply about this. She does couples that I don't think lasted 5 years after the end of their book.
Yeah.
And I know some people dislike that are like, "Ugh, this is terrible. This is the worst thing ever. I can't imagine." I actually don't mind it because there are books that, like, at Mr. Garcia by T.L. Swan, at the end of that book, I do not believe that they actually like each other.
Yeah.
They're so angry, and I vibe with that a lot when it comes to enemies to lovers, especially if it's a really quick flip from
Yeah.
enemies to lovers. Like, you didn't do the work to figure out
Yeah.
why they were enemies. And like,
Or bullies, or like
yeah.
bully romance, like when he did the unthinkable. I read unthinkable books. There were He's the worst kind of men. And yet you're just like, I'm falling in love with you. And I'm like, maybe you're gonna go to therapy one day and then you're gonna realize he's a ruby red flag and you're gonna come back and be like, no, I got my power back. Just like I said, Jen got her power back and says, I'm a breadwinner. I'm gonna divorce you.
Right. Like I moved on. And like I kind of like to look at books a little bit with that cynical eye. Like, do I think those characters are going to last 5 years? And I know someone will say, oh, but the epilogue. Well, but if the epilogue is like really like cutesy and just too much, then it starts to feel like the
You're trying too
over-involved.
hard.
Yeah, like the over-involved, overhyped, like Pinterest mom that everything matches and everything's glowing, but you know.
It's like when you see couples putting engagement pic not engagement picture but pictures of like celebrating and like how much I love you and all stuff like you're like oh they're gonna get divorced and like we're gonna get the divorce announcement I'm single and free in a few months like it's just like this sense of like we're gonna show our picture perfect life and the reality is like it's very different behind closed doors and where we're showing this facade that's beautiful and it's perfect and then you just realize like a few months later like oh no he was the worst and all these different things. I think that sometimes epilogues can go that way and can give us that idea and then realize like you're not gonna last that long.
Maybe Lindo says the epilogue happens only like 3 weeks later. Ugh. See, those are the epilogues I don't mind. I feel like kind of like Jenny, if I got the I love you in the context of that book, of that story, and I feel like these two characters are solid.
Yes.
I am okay ending the book on them being solid. And I think so. I have, and I will ask you this, if a book doesn't have a third act breakup, because we know that I am pro third act breakup or outside angst elements causing that third act tension. Sometimes the endings and them coming together is too easy. And I worry that when they have that first fight, that first big hurdle to overcome, they're not going to be able to overcome it because they didn't have to figure out how to do that before they were officially like a couple.
I'm a low angsty kind of girly, so less fighting, more love, more sex, more stuff, like more of the other stuff, and just kind of like just enjoy your life and be this way and whatever it is, it's totally fine. It's just it works sometimes. But then there again, I like Magnolia Park. That's another example of happy for now, or even this couple should not be together. Like it's so
Okay,
toxic, the
tell me about
couple.
this book. Tell me about this series because I see people reading it, but they talk about it like it was a drug they didn't want to take. They
It
liked it, but they feel dirty that they liked it.
It is. It is. I think that's a good description. So Magnolia Parks, basically, I think it's gonna be like 8 book series, but there's 5 books out there. They're separated by two storylines. There's Magnolia and BJ. The first is Magnolia Parks, and then there's Daisy Hates and Julian, her brother, who is involved in the mafia, but he does an art dealing thieving thing, and then Christian. But Christian was in love with Magnolia, so Daisy is actually jealous of Magnolia. And Magnolia is like the girl that everyone likes her, the it girl. And so BJ and Magnolia have this like epic love story where he cheated on her, and then cheated on her, and then cheated on her, and then she cheated on him, and then he cheated her back. And it's all toxic. And we don't get much blood. You will hate this book because we don't get much blood, but we get a lot of fashion. So we get all the name brands, like fashion that you did not know existed. You're like, Yves Saint Laurent, this, blah, blah, blah. It's like all the fashion labels are drop, name drop. And we don't get much. All they do is just hang out in the club or hang out in the place. And there's a little bit of mafia where there's like some guns and some stuff. And there's some art thieving and whatever. And they're addictive that you can't, like, once you start reading, you can't stop reading them. And they're long. And they're like a lot of things, nothing happens. However, they are right now, at least I haven't finished the final Magnolia books because It's too long. It's like 800 pages. But it's supposedly, I had to ask, because she doesn't believe in happily ever after. So I'm like, is it going to be? And so they said that it's a satisfactory ending. So I don't know. Take it what you like. But this is not, this is a, it's a romance. It's a love story. It's a toxic romance that needs a lot of therapy.
Okay. So does it is it like a soap opera a little bit?
Yes, it's like Gossip Girl set
Oh,
in
okay.
London.
So like Young and the Restless meets Gossip Girl in novel
Yes.
form.
With a bunch of fashion icons and
Okay,
footnotes.
so the
And then the
fashion.
other one, and then Daisy's. Oh, because then you
Yeah,
get
go ahead.
Daisy, and it's like a weird timeline. So you go to Magnolia's books, then you go to Daisy's book that happens concurrently with Magnolia's book, and then you go back to Magnolia, then you go back to Daisy. And the storylines are like choppy because you're following different places. So Magnolia's writing is very flowery, very beautiful writing. And then Daisy is very analytical. So we get footnotes galore. And her thought process, her inner process, it's all a bunch of footnotes that you just have to keep reading and bring it back.
Okay.
I know I'm not selling this book, but you know, once you're in the Magnolia Parks, you don't know, you understand your love and hate relationship with this
So the
series.
fashion piece is intriguing to me because if you started reading romances, contemporary romances, I would say like
Oh, the
two,
fashion is horrible.
well, but 2006, 2007, and then it kind of took a break because of the housing bubble and all that kind of stuff, but then came back in 2000. 10, 11, 12. In that time, we got a ton of romance that leaned heavy into the posh fashion. Like, if you think about some of these original billionaire romances, everybody wanted their, red-soled shoes, and she was putting on the Prada dress with the, certain bag and all that stuff. And
Yeah.
I'm not a fashion person. Like, soft pants and t-shirts are kind of my, they're my gig. And I remember reading those books and thinking, gosh, people really like to be fancy. I mean, if there's even like a nub of a heel, I'm likely falling down. Like, I
Yeah,
can't
no,
wear.
these books are like there's a Magnolia Parks closet account which they actually do show the actual pieces and some of the pieces because Jessa wears some of those pieces, so she probably is knowledgeable. And so they actually tear pictures of Jessa Hastings, the author, wearing the pieces and stuff. So
Yeah.
that tells you like it's deep knowledge. It's someone who follows, you know, there's a lot of Instagram accounts that follow like rich people or shows and tell you like what the fashion comes from. It's basically someone
Yeah.
who's so deeply knowledgeable about the fashion industry and wants to share their expertise. And it's great. If you want to know about the latest stuff, you'll get to know from these books. And you're going to be like a great, in some ways, like a piece of history of what was the fashion look like in the 2010,
Yeah.
2020s.
I kind of that's kind of intriguing. So I'm going to ask this
Yes.
because I think this is important to think about. When you pick up a romance book, you and I, we know that if it's labeled romance, unless the devil himself wrote it, which we're not going to say his name because I hate him with all that is every inch of my being. Outside of him, if a book is labeled as romance, we have an expectation of at minimum an HFN.
Yes, or no one dies.
Or no one dies. Like none of the main characters are going to die. Now, an exception to this, I will say one thing. Jacinda Wilder, that they wrote a book called The Cabin. And the book is written in two parts. The heroine, at the end of the first part, her partner dies. But then
Yes.
there is a second part. So it's like a 400-page book. The second part is she has a second chance at love
Okay.
that she finds out. So someone can die, but at the end of the book, somebody has to be happily ever after or happily for
Yes.
now together.
Yes.
So when you pick up a romance and an author is trying to do avant-garde or romance with a twist, because the expectation is an HEA or an HFN. How do you feel when you pick up those avant-garde or romance with a
So
twist?
I actually picked up, and you just sparked my knowledge. I picked up Beth O'Leary's The No Show, which is Beth also writes a lot of more genre fiction. They're more that tone. And The No Show basically says the story about this guy who goes on three blind dates on Valentine's Day. And you don't know. And so she plays with time. And time is an essence, and things are don't make the sense until like the end of the stuff. And so there's a death that happens, and you're like, wait, what is happening? So I would say that's a book that, even though it has a romantic plot line, it is not a romance or rom-com or rom-dramedy. It's a genre fiction with romantic elements. And I know Beth tends to get swiped into the flasher, and all this, all these books are like romance. They're more of the, some of them are rom-coms and some of them are genre fiction.
Genre fiction. Okay, so Lindo brings up Pen Pal by J.T. Geisinger. Okay, first of all, she says for her it falls into romance. I say no. I say this
No.
is genre fiction. This is genre fiction with romantic elements.
Yes.
Also, Broccoli Aliens. Need I say more?
Wait, Rockley Aliens, what is that?
The schizophrenic husband.
Oh, okay.
Did you read that book?
No, I read enough spoilers to know that's not a book for me.
It's not a book for anybody.
It's a popular book, so
I know.
it got picked up by a traditional
Right.
college, so it
Bramble
did.
picked it up for paperback distribution, so.
So it isn't something. It's just I just knew it was not for me. I saw the spoilers from the beginning. I saw the drama that happened at the beginning, and then I saw the spoilers actually like as recent as like a couple months ago.
Yeah, well, because
And
she
I
got
was
her
like, oh,
paperback release, so it
yes.
brought it back into everybody's.
Yes.
So when an author does something like that, I personally hold a grudge against that author. So, and if anybody knows me, they know that I'm petty. I am a petty, petty bitch. Like, there is no difference. I mean, so because she tried to market that originally as like, oh my God, this is just a great love story. And it's full of romance, and but I did a little twist. And then, you know, as it came out and I read it and I was like, what the actual fuck is wrong with this person? This is not a romance. They died to find love. Spoiler, if you wanted to read that book, just so we know.
Yes, we've been telling spoilers here, but yeah, I would say that's not a romance, and I understand like they were trying to do genre bending things, and it's like not supposed to be a romance, but it's kind of like a romance because romance sells, and in some ways it's a marketing ploy. It's a lot of times when we see a lot of books are sold as romance, but then we like realize it's like, oh, it's not a romance, it's just like a genre fiction or is a love story, and you're like, I feel duped.
Yeah. And I feel like a lot, especially coming out of trad pub, more so than the indie, and particularly I would say like even Forever. I think Forever is one of those, Forever Publishing is one of those towing that line between women's fiction with romantic elements and romance. Like Abby Jimenez's books, the journey, the self-discovery, the character arc seems to be the bigger focus, that the romance is secondary. That relationship, building the relationship, getting to know each other is secondary to overcoming whatever is part of their character's journey.
Yes, I
And
agree.
yes, there are romantic elements, but if it was my job to shelve, I would not shelve Abby into romance
Yeah.
because I feel like it's the character growth is, in a way, those are beginner romances.
I think they remind me, and so I'll tell about my romance journey. So I
Yeah.
actually started reading Sweet Valley High in the 90s, and then I graduated to what it was called chick lit at the time, which is women's fiction or genre fiction, and there were some romantic elements. Some of them did not. So I'd read the Jennifer Weiners, the Jane Greens, the Emily Giffens, and stuff like that in the aughts. And then I graduated. I somehow skipped Twilight. I have not read Twilight. I have not watched the movies. I know what it's all about and everything.
You're not
I
missing
skipped that
anything.
over. skip that over. And I went to 50 Shades because I saw the Today Show recommending it. And I was like, whoa, we got to figure it out. Which, by the way, my boss at the time, male boss, was reading 50 Shades along with me. And we did not talk about it. We were like, what did you just read? And I was just like, what the heck am I reading here? But I finished all the three books and I devoured them. And I was like, oh, okay. But I did not go back to romance. I did not know there was romance at the time. So I went back to genre fiction and stuff like that. And somehow in 2016, I discovered romance like by like a way of YouTube. It told me like, hey, these are new adult recommendations. And I was like, well, I used to work in a college. I might just be interested in this. And that's how I ended up discovering that there was a genre called romance that had the elements that I like, which was the romantic elements, but also ended with a happy for now, happy ever after ending. Because my biggest issue, my biggest pet peeve is when an author kills a character in the last chapter and I don't have enough time to grieve. So I knew for romance, I did not have that issue. I would not have a character die in the last chapter. And I will not be, and I will be able to grieve if the character ends earlier on the chapter and I'd see the process.
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
Yeah, no, and I find that really interesting because, so I started my romance in historical yeah. romance, the Bodice Rippers, the Jude Devereaux, the Joanna Lindsays, like that is where Becky started. But my contemporary readings were cozy mysteries, which I know you now read a lot of. And I used to think that like Janet Ivanovich, the Stephanie Plum books, like yeah. this was an epic romance, right? Like there's yeah. spicy bits in those books, but you had to pick a team. It fell in line with the, you know, like a little bit, it was a love triangle, you know, was she going to yep. be with Ranger? Was she going to be with Morelli? And I loved Bob the dog. And I loved those books. And I always shied away from contemporary romance because I had to take the Janet Ivanoviches in kind of in pieces because I'd get annoyed. Like, why aren't you just picking the dude? Like, I'm sorry, I was Team Morelli. Like, I liked Ranger. He was sexy, but I really wanted her to stay with Morelli. But at the end of the day, like, they weren't satisfying. Like, there wasn't. And then, like you, well, and I always read category romances, but I never put together that there might be longer versions than just
yes.
category. But I love category, right? Like I'm a huge category reader. But it wasn't until 50 Shades of Grey that I'm like, oh, you mean there are full length, not 250 page books that have an HEA? And so, yeah. And then, you know, did you go down the kind of YA rabbit hole with like Hunger Games and Divergent?
That was my 2012. That's why I skipped. I think it 50 Shades and it was YA dystopian. And I live in New York at the time and I used to get the New York Public Library. I used to go and like pick up like tomes and tomes of books. So I found out ACOTAR and Throne of Glass before I found out romance. And then romance, my entry was Elle Kennedy. And then after that, I was like, well, I had a job that I had nothing to do. I was like bored out of my mind. So I had like, I was earning little money and I was like, well, I can get a 99 cent book on Kindle. And then I got Kindle Unlimited and I was like, well, I can just read. So I was reading, I started consuming romance because that was the majority of those 99 cents, like those cheaper books that you can just consume over and over and over.
Yeah.
And I just dove deep. I read like 300 books that year because I had nothing to do. I was in my phone. I was just time thefting. I was like, well, there's nothing for me to do. I might as well.
Yeah, it's so interesting because I mean, I loved the cozy mystery. And I read like the Hannah
Swanson
cookie, chocolate chip cookie murders.
I read that one. It's a little problematic if you read it now.
Well, I find that with a lot of books.
Yes, but if you read it now, it's really problematic. There's a really problematic thing that Hannah does. And I'm like, I am so shocked that it's still around, the thing that she does.
Have you read any of the newer ones? Are they still problematic?
No, because I am shocked that the thing that Hannah did, the obstruction of justice that she just did.
I'm trying to think here. Who else did I read that was like... And I think that there are some older authors. Like, if we look at Nora Roberts... We all think, oh, romance author, right? But if you really dig into her books, her earlier stuff was definitely romance.
Yes, but now it's romantic suspense. Now it's like more mystery. The J.D. Robb is like romantic thriller, or like, you know. So she's definitely leaning into the idea of like, you know, there's a serial killer on the library, or there's something going on that gives you this plot line. And that's what she's making. And then she does have the fantasy and the paranormal space. But yeah, not a seg like a contemporary, like the wedding one. We won't get another one of those, you know.
I love those. I have recently reread that in the last 2 years, and then reread it a second, like reread it another time, or even those, the Boonesboro Inn series, which is based on the town where her bookstore is.
Yes.
I
And
loved.
she has an inn. There's a Boonesboro Inn. There's an inn that you can stay over. She does own the Boonesboro
I
Inn.
just wish that we had that. I would love another series like that from
It's
her.
not selling, probably. That's really what it
Oh,
comes
I'm
down to.
sure it is.
It's, you know. And no, and we cannot tell Nora what to write because,
No.
you know, Nora will come down to on
I know.
you. We do not. We just let Nora do
We
things.
love
I have
her.
no opinion.
Whatever she gives us.
If she wants to write the groceries list, if she wants to write the phone book that we have not seen in
Yes.
20 years, she can write the phone book. It is fine.
She's kind of like the principal.
Yes.
Like, you do not want to be called into her
No,
office.
do not.
So we
So
just are
you
like,
do what
hello,
you do.
ma'am, you do it.
Phone book. You can write the phone book. We
Right.
will love this. We'll make it a bestseller.
Many of us in the industry all are kind of like, we don't want to get on her. Like, you want to be on her radar,
No.
but you do not want to be on her radar.
No, I don't want to be a narrator. I am fine with just being like a nobody podcaster. So.
I'm trying to think of some others that were like really great. Like Mary Kay Andrews, I would say now she's leaning more towards the women's fiction. It's less of the romance. Meg Cabot wrote her Queen of Babel series, which I would say is women's fiction with romantic elements, even
I have
though.
to tell you, Meg Cabot and Meg Cabot, I have a story with Meg Cabot. So I work in NYU in 2006. It was my first job out of graduate school. I was very excited, and then lo and behold, I hated the job. But I heard about Meg, the former RD, was initial director that left NYU to because she sold her book Princess Diary to be a movie. And so she's been the shining light of like there's a world out there that you can do. So Meg Cabot has been the shining light in some ways. It's like you can pursue your creative passions and you can sell a book and have a career. And it's like this sense of like, so I met her in person. I told her, I was like, I actually work at NYU. We work with around the same people. And you were basically told, like, we're told about you and your story and how you left NYU. Because NYU, no offense, but it was a terrible job in the aughts. It was terrible. It's a job that it's basically, it reminded me of the Devil Wears Prada when she says it's a job that a million girls wanted. And you're like, yeah, I hated this job. So,
There's another book that sometimes gets shelves as romance, but is not romance.
yeah.
The Devil Wears Prada. It's
Oh,
not.
that's not romance. That's genre fiction. It's a
There
great
are
movie,
people.
and the boyfriend is the villain, the ultimate villain. It's not Miranda Presley. It's the boyfriend.
Another author that has kind of moved away from romance and gone leaned more into the genre fiction, I would say, is Jennifer Crusie. And that might just be part of like it's easier now because I think she's more retired than she is full-time writing anymore.
I think she's writing in Amazon books. I think that's her. I've seen a couple books from
Well, and she's
her.
co-writing a lot too,
Yeah.
with
So,
her like Agnes and the Hitman series that she
yeah.
has. But her old stuff is great.
I think Susanna Elizabeth Phillips, is that her name? I think
Yes.
I read some of her later books, and they're more genre fiction than romance. They're toeing the line. It's very like, so some of the older authors are toeing the line. I think maybe they're just like over it. I think I talked to Rachel Gibson, actually. She used to write a lot of romance, and she says, I remember talking to her, and she's now writing contemporary, like genre fiction, and she's like, I just got bored of it. Like, I don't want to write it. Like, it just is, you
Well,
know.
and we're even seeing authors like Serena Bowen and Vi Keelan right now who are dipping their toes into thrillers.
Yes, but they're thrilled. Oh, did you read the Vi Keelan thriller?
It's on
I
my
have
Kindle. I
thoughts.
haven't read it yet.
I have thoughts. So this is a very romance author thriller. So the main character is a psychiatrist, and she's married to a hockey player. How in the world was she married to a hockey player? Like, this is a romance author. Like, it really comes down to this is a romance author. How is a psychiatrist, a respected psychiatrist, married to a hockey player? Make it make sense.
Make it
The
make
book is
sense.
okay. The book is definitely, it has twists and turns, it has stalking, it has a little bit of everything. But that part, I was like, okay,
She
we
couldn't
gotta.
let go of her, like.
But we knew hockey players were sexy, so we're just gonna make him a hockey player.
I love that. I actually kind of love that.
Yes, it's a good book. The audio is excellent, by the way. So audio is actually like the way to go.
Okay, I'll have to check that out. Okay, let's see here. What else? So when we look at genre fiction with romantic elements, let's talk about what are going to be the expectations of those books? Like when it comes to the ending, you know, when you pick up, and because I don't think Emily Griffith's books, to me, they're genre fiction with romantic elements. You know, her wedding
Yes.
series, it's not about the romance. And so when I end that book, I don't necessarily expect a
Well,
wedding.
the ending is ends with her, the first Something Borrowed ends with her seeing Rachel, seeing her ex-best friend. So it's again, the ending is not about, it's a friendship. It's not about the actual romance that the girl cheated on him. You probably have seen the movie. If you
Yeah.
have not, the movie's
Well,
great.
and I read the book and it felt like a million years ago that I read it. So.
So, but it's so you see that, and I'm still mad they didn't do Something Blue. Got the movie. I was like, I needed the movie. I needed to see the other one to see the couple. It's not. It's a genre fiction. Idea is that you have to satisfy the idea of the heroine's arc through the story. It's like watching. I love How to Be Single, which is a rom-com, quote-unquote rom-com movie, but she ended up with nobody. And I'm
Yeah.
like, I love it because I have someone who's single. I was like, I would like to see that journey. I like to see the journey of like, you know, overcoming your adversity, overcoming your place. And that's a journey that's just as worthwhile as also having a romantic partner. But the genre fiction allows you to not have a romantic partner as the end of the story.
Yeah. I think Susan Mallory does that a lot. Like the relationship will be the meat of the middle, but when we get to the end, it's like coming together with your sisters and coming together with your friends. You know, establishing what you look like now. And I mean, I love, like, and I don't mind the word chick flick. I know that many people, you know, they don't, or chick lit, like
Chicklet.
those words do not bother me. But I love the movies or the books that are about deep-seated friendship. Like there's one where a group of friends like go on a vacation together to like the Napa Valley to Sonoma. And you know they're all coming together. I think Maya Rudolph is in that book, or in that movie, and I love that. I love seeing those journeys and those moments of, you know, maybe your friendship fractured or your friend group has changed, and you're trying to figure out how you. I love those books as much, but I don't expect everyone in that book to have, or at the end of that movie or whatever it is, to have that complete HEA. I don't need it because that's not the expectations of those.
You can find it. They call it uplit stuff, genre. Breanne Thayne writes that, Jill Chavez writes that, Robin Carr writes that. So a lot of the Harlequin trade paperbacks tend to have those like more genre fiction, women's arc, sisters, friendships, you name it, kind of like the female arc is like is explored, and some do have romantic elements. Most of them have a little bit of romance elements, but they're not the driving force of the book. At least that's how it evolved right now. I think I know Rayanne used to write romantic suspense, and Joel used to write even lace Harlequin romance.
Right.
But they have moved on to more of these romantic, you know, elements.
Don't you think Christina Lawrence has done that too?
They have it's not as shocking. I know it's shocking if you read Beautiful Bastard and to read their contemporary stuff. I read pretty much older backlist. It's not as shocking. They dabble dabble. Some of them are more genre fiction, but some of them are still romance. They're rom-coms. They're just kind of like TV rom-coms.
But I feel like even a book like Hazel and Josh, which I love that book, I love that story. It's one of the few Friends to Lovers books that I'm like, yep, believe it 100%.
Yes.
But if you look at how that book evolves, how that characters and those relationship, it's more about Hazel seeing herself with as she is now.
Yeah.
And letting go of what her preconceived notions were.
Yeah. So I don't know. I would do, yes, it is like, I think they're, again, they're great romance entry points. Just like the Emily Henry is a great entry point. Just like Abby Jimenez is a great entry point. These are great entry points for the genre. They're not, they don't define the genre. I think people just get caught up like, these are the ones you should know. But like reality is that there's other, there's better or not better, but there's different romances out there that you can dive into. And the genre is so wide and it has so many niches and so many specific things that for your taste, there's likely to have one that you like.
Yeah. Yeah. I, you know, I love this genre. You yeah. love this genre. We love these books. And I'm very protective of this genre. Like yeah. I struggle with the divide of, you know, the more heartwarming, closed door, fade to black romance authors thinking like spicier romance needs like a warning label or mature content, like printed on the cover. And I like want to punch people, but I think there's place and space for all of these books. And we should all be working together. Just stop acting like a bunch of jackasses.
I think it's the idea that there's competition, that there's like scarcity mentality of like, if you don't like this, then you won't like this. But like, I'm a mood reader. I like a little bit of everything. I like genre fiction. I like thrillers. I like cozies. And as a reader, I have more than enough time to try out different things. And that's my goal. My goal is not to reach out to just the influencers who just only read the books. My goal is to reach out to the regular readers who might feel a struggle like, okay, I don't know what to read and I have a different mood and I can tell you like, here's in your hand. So you feel like a celebrity normal romance is, or you want a vampire, or you want a cozy mystery with a romantic love triangle. Do you want cheating romances? Do you want to work through your divorce and have like a toxic man fall down? Great. We'll have a book for you.
Yeah.
And that's what I like. That's what I like about the genre is like how diverse the genre is and how even if it's not in the genre, there's might be elements from the genre in other genres. And that's the beauty of it.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting. You brought up the point that you're not yelling into the void at the other influencers to read books.
No, because they don't pay the bills.
Right. And, you know, someone said, because, you know, my family loves to give me a hard time and be like, oh, you're an influencer. And I hate that term. I hate that because I'm not an influencer. I consider myself, I mean, I'm a content creator. I create content for the romance reading community. I just consider myself a community member of the romance book community. I'm just a community member. I bought mm-hmm. myself a microphone and I want to connect with other readers. You know, I want to talk about books with readers. I don't want to talk to another influencer who's going to be like, oh, this author, you should be reading this author, you know, because they sent me a fancy PR box. I want to talk to the reader that's like, oh my God, this book kept me up until 3 a.m. Yes. And I loved it. And you know, you and I, we've talked about like how our love of libraries and finding the audiobooks and the ways to do it affordably. You and I've talked about all of that. And we talk as readers,
yes.
not influencer or podcaster yelling into the void at the other one. It's no, just love of books.
It's a really strange place to be because I was talking about someone to another podcaster about this. And I was like, because every so often you go with threads, the question about PR packages, people who don't get PR packages, people who don't deny it, stuff. And it's a very place. And like, and the irony is I've gone to a point where I've done, and here's the thing, I've been working on this for 7 years.
Right.
It's going to be 8 years in December. I've been doing this for 7 years. I produce 750 episodes. So it's not like I've done like one or two. I've been doing this day in, day out. I've been talking to authors. I've been building relationships. And I got to a point where I do get sent a lot, and it's great. I get sent a lot, but it doesn't mean that I have to do anything about it. It's like, it's just on the media, I get to figure out like which one is in my content calendar. I've told PR companies to delete my address because I do not want waste. I don't want PR packages. Like you get to a point where they send you for a consideration, and like I told them the style that I want to have, which is just send me an ebook or send me the information, and I'll make a decision. I'll look for myself. There's a beauty of actually talking to other readers and telling me, like, actually, readers telling me, like, you know what? I actually like the new Tessa Bailey, and this is why I liked it. And you know what? I actually read the new Tessa Bailey thanks to her recommendation, and I actually liked it.
The au
And it's
pair
like
affair.
that's the drama. I think no, the drama, the new one, the even the one that's coming out next year, the Dream
Oh,
Girl drama.
I have it on my Kindle, but I just got the audiobook for the au pair affair because somebody was like, it was really good and it was.
I have the audio for the Au Pair Affair, so I may go back to it. But that's actually what I view. I appreciate more is talking to other readers and talking about like, hey, I like this book. This is where I liked it. This is what stuff. Because a lot of times PR companies tell us they're doing a job trying to sell you the book, but they don't know you unless they, some of them do know me, which is great, but that's weird. I've been doing this for 7 years. But you connecting with readers and trying giving it a try and having the opportunity to be a mood reader feels so much more worthwhile, and it gets to genuine like reactions. I'm not here to and I have to tell you, books that I hate, you may love, and I'll tell you why I still recommend them because my yuck might be your yum, and your yum might be my yuck, and that's okay, and we're fine. I respect your choice. I don't have a question about it. You know, it's just like everyone else has their own taste.
Yeah. Well, and I still talk about books that maybe I didn't love and a 3-star, like the whole 3-star, 4-star, 5-star, all of that discourse.
I don't rate
I know you
publicly
don't
anymore.
rate. My community still is kind of on our ratings, but we're just kind of trying to move away from it. I would like to not rate anymore, but I gotta educate the community that way that
I got in trouble for rating, so I don't do that anymore.
well,
And
I've
it's like I actually do. If you join my Substack, I'm sharing what I'm reading, and I'm sharing like live, like saying like, "Hey, I actually said in last week's Substack that I said I was like, I don't remember this book, so maybe you should pick it on your own choosing because I don't remember anything about the story. I just read it, so that's probably like my low star is like I don't remember the book,
book, yeah.
obviously, but you know I finished so."
Well, and I rate my DNS, and people are just like, well, you didn't finish it. I'm like, yeah, but you have to know why. Like, I review it because you need to know why it didn't work for me. Because
Yeah.
why it didn't work, because I always
May work
say,
for you.
well, and I'm a community member. So I always feel bad when I'm reading a book and everybody has talked about this book and about how much they love it. And like how, like Pen Pal from J.T. Geisinger, that was a struggle for me. It was a struggle for me to read that book. But, people were recommending it and talking about it. And I felt like I got to put my eyes on it to see where it is. And at the end of the day, at the time that I read it, there weren't a lot of reviews from readers saying why it wasn't working for them, what didn't work. And I always feel like I never want to leave someone out there floating. Wondering why they're not connecting with a popular book. Like, there's some popular authors you love and I don't love because I think their books are riddled with plot holes and substandard writing. And you're like, eh.
You just like keep going. It's totally fine. I'm not thinking too deep. I'm not writing a book review. I'm not writing a like obviously I'm not a reviewer. I'm a recommender, and that's
Yeah.
the lane that I picked. And so I don't try to do like a book report about all the different things. I'm all about the vibes. I'm all about the feels. It just feels good. I enjoyed it. It's fine. Just like I love palate cleansers. Like if I ever become an author, I'll write palate cleansers. I'll write novellas. They're like a little angsty. Then you read in between those dark romances or those big ACOTAR books, and you just need like something like just keeps you going. Those are my books. That's my lane. Those are, and most people hate them. And I'm like, no, I need that.
I love a good palate cleanser. I just sometimes get like if a book is only vibes, I'm always like, I need to stick my teeth into something.
I think you might not like, I love Morgan Elizabeth for that
Yeah.
reason. The R.S. Gray, those are I love because
I
they're just
like
like vibes. They're
R.S.
just
Gray to
like,
me is a great palate cleanser, but I Morgan Elizabeth, I tried one of her books and I was just like,
It's no vibes. It's like written
Okay.
for me. It's all rom-com through the odds. It's just like we're it's all pink and pretty, and it's just like this like lots pumpkin spice latte, and it's just like kind of like fun and petty revenge. It's amazing. I love this, but I love this for me because I'm unapologetically like a basic girl.
And
Like
that's fair.
honestly, I'm a basic teenager. Like I'm still 43, but if I live where I'm like I'm just a teenager.
I'm still 19, living my best life.
16, actually.
16. Oh, 16, even living.
We just got our car.
Oh my God. The problem with being 16 is you still had parents that expected you to be home by a certain
Care. My
time.
parents didn't care at this point. They were just like, whatever, you have a car. Can you drive your brother to school?
Can
You
you
know?
drive your brother to school? That's all you're good for.
It's like I grew up in the 90s. It was not like this like parentals now. Like, you know, parents let us do
I
like
grew up in
go
the 80s and
flawless.
90s. I had curfews.
I did not. They
Jeez.
let us go to the beach by ourselves, and like I would like swim like about a mile away on the beach, which you're not supposed to on a like
Yeah.
random day. Like, we're like, let's go to the beach. It's fine, you
Oh my
know.
God, you're insane.
Yes.
Okay, so if you guys have comments, thoughts on the HEA or the HFN or genre fiction with romantic elements, and you want to ask us questions or anything, leave us some comments, especially here on the YouTube. And Lori and I will come back and we'll answer them. We'll talk about it. Laura, not Lori. I gave her a
Yeah.
nickname. You guys, this is how bad I am at names. We've known each other what, since 2020?
Yeah.
Yeah, I call her Lori. She doesn't go by Lori for anybody else but me.
Is all good. So, yes. Yeah.
Anyway, okay, Laura, it is now that time. You have not experienced this yet live, so be excited for the awkwardness that is now going to ensue, okay?
Okay.
Okay, so it's that time, guys, for Book of the Week. It is Book of the Week time. Okay, Laura, what is your Book of the Week?
I got two.
Give them
Sorry, I
all.
was extra.
We'll take them
So
both.
I got a novella. They both are traditional published. So I got a novella, and then I got an actual like spooky season time. So
Okay.
the first one is a novella. It's Big Fan by Alexander Romanov. It's by this I know this literary place. They're trying to take romance to a next level. I understand it has problematic issues, but the book is delicious. It's a novella size, so you can read it in one sitting. It's about a political strategist. Think Olivia Pope. I think someone who's doing the campaign manager who was broken up in marriage with someone who was like the Kennedy because he cheated on her, and she's well known. And then she somehow connects with her boy band, former boy band, who is now trying to do a solo career, but he did some fashion in the between, and he asked her to do lead his campaign of how to become a solo star, because when she was a teenager, she used to run his fan club, and so they come back. It's like it's a delicious, better than it's like similar to the idea of you of a
Yeah.
boy bander who's actually grown up, and there's not like awkward 20-year age gap. So you can read it in one sitting. It's delicious. It's fun. It's just frothy. It's just like a good romance. So that one is actually like it's good.
Okay.
The second recommendation is Fan Fiction by Kate Stateman London, I think it is. I don't know. It's actually said it's imagine Buffy the Vampire Slayer that you're involved in the fandom. Imagine that Buffy the Vampire Slayer is alive and true living. And you have to change the story. So, and who you thought it was the villain may not be the villain based on the writing of the said author who wrote the story. It is fun. It is campy. It is just
Sounds
like
a little
vampires. Oh,
bonkers.
and it is bonkers. And this is not a teenager falling in love with a 200-year-old vampire.
Okay.
She's a PhD student, for God's sake. She writes a buzzy BuzzFeed article about it. We get podcast episodes, we get text messages, we get a reclusive author who may come out as a real author out of nowhere and creates like a whole more shenanigans. And the reclusive author picks her name based on Taylor Swift,
Okay,
your
so that's
favorite Taylor
fan
Swift song.
fiction.
Fan fiction, yes.
Okay.
I really loved it. I like vampires.
It
Vampires are
sounds
real thing.
delightful.
It is just like fun and frothy, and yes, there are some themes of like there's sexual assault and there's actually like overcoming that character arc, but it's just so gay.
Okay, that sounds delightful. My book of the week is Pumpkin Spice and Poltergeist. So next week, our episode is all of the fall vibe romances. So all of those that are going to give you the chunky sweater, leaf peeping, pumpkin spice vibes. So I was doing my research, as one does, and I read Pumpkin Spice and Poltergeist by Allie K. Mulford and K. Ellie Morrison. This book, it's sapphic, and it was delightful. It was so flirty, great banner, really great spice, and a very quick read. So if you're looking for the palate cleanser, this one is it. The one heroine, she has recently, her ex has died, and she has some unfinished questions that she wants answered. So she summons her ex from the other side into the real, into the current world, and then she gets haunted by her ex as she's dating and meets someone new. It's so good, you guys. It was so sweet and so fun, and the cover is adorable. Like, I'm gonna need it for my shelves. So yeah, if you are looking for a fun sapphic romance with all the fall vibes, I 10 out of 10 recommend that.
Awesome.
Thank you to author Melanie Moreland for sponsoring our September Patreon swag pack. And then, Lori, tell us what is coming up for What to Read Next podcast. Laura, not Lori, Becky. Jesus.
It is totally fine. So, more author interviews, more book recommendations. I don't have a content planner as you may think. I just produce a lot of podcasts, and then in the morning, I'm like, which one should I release? It really comes down to that. I work every morning with two other podcasters, and so that's what I do. But there'll be more book recommendations. I think we're gonna do some cozy fantasy, some talky romances, your recommendations on the romance fiction. There's gonna be more cozy mystery content. Authors wise, we have Rhianne Thain coming in this for the winter for Christmas books. We have Sarah Holly coming with a cozy with a fantasy book and a paranormal rom-com that she has. So we have like a couple authors, but you can always look at the backlist if you're look if you're curious what your favorite author read or recommend. So you can look at my backlist. Chances are just an author interview from them. There are a lot of them, and there you can find the information. But all the information you can go to whattoreadnextblog.com, and you can find links to the YouTube, which there are podcasts available there, or the Substack where I do share my book recommendations, but I actually read. I don't share them publicly. They don't my ratings don't they don't appear on Goodreads. I know it bothers my friends. I'm like, what did you read it? And I was like, I'm not gonna tell you. Oh, actually I'll tell my friends, but not to the public.
Fair. And I will link all of your socials on our on the shelf show notes at buzzingaboutromance.com. So if you'd like to find more information with Lori and her podcast, make sure you check out the on the shelf show notes at buzzingaboutromance.com. Make sure you join us back here Wednesday for our discussion of Feral Sin by Susan Wright. All of our books the month of October for our Wednesday episodes are, I'm calling them Out of This World. We have PNR, we have aliens, we have some monsters. We're just gonna do all the things this month. And then we're back next Sunday with all the cozy autumn vibed romances. For a list of books talked about this weekend, please visit our on the shelf show notes at buzzingaboutromance.com. You can find the current list of books for our upcoming Wednesday episodes on our website. And don't forget to follow us on social media for more updates. Join our community of romance loving enthusiasts. If you love this episode, please leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform. Share it with your friends, and your help with your support, it helps bring more exciting content to you every week. Laura, thank you so much for hanging out tonight and joining me.
Thank you. This was so much fun.
I loved having you, and I will have you back soon. Until next time, everybody, happy reading.
Find us on Instagram at Buzzing About Romance or on Twitter at Buzzing Romance. If you like the podcast, please leave a review. If you'd like to support us directly, join the Bookcase and Coffee Patreon and receive exclusive content only available to Patreon members. Check out bookcaseandcoffee.com for our on-the-shelf show notes.